This edition of Culture with Robert Bound was first broadcast on the 25th of May 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound. This week we're asking, where did all the great ads go? And why are we asking that question? Because we watched Mad Men's finale last week and it ended on a high note with Coca-Cola's iconic "I want to teach the world to sing" commercial. And we wondered where the equivalent might come from in today's globalised advertising world, which seems straitened and forgettable in comparison. Was there a golden age of advertising? If so, when? Or are we living through it now? We'll have some great creative minds on hand to sort the drumming gorillas from the Sillett Bangs, one of which is AMV founder Peter Mead.
For me, one of my abiding sort of memories when I finally sort of turn up my toes will be of the fun I've had in the business.
That's all to come right here on this edition of Culture with me, Robert Bound.
I'd like to buy the world a home and furnish it with love. Grow apple trees and honeybees and snow white turtle doves.
If, like many fans of great TV drama, you caught the last ever episode of Mad Men last week, you'll know that this iconic ad from Coca-Cola was used to close the show. And that got us thinking, where did all the great ads go? We're going to begin the show with a bit of industry history from writer, broadcaster and advertising aficionado Sam Delaney. Does he think we're still in a golden age of advertising?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, you still get the odd great ad, but, you know, there was an era, particularly in Britain, actually, more than the States even, where there was an amazing amount of great ads that kind of captured the public's imagination. And, you know, there was a brief period between the sort of 60s and the 80s where people actually didn't resent ads as much as that they have come to. They didn't think that they were just annoying distractions imposing themselves on the TV. And in fact, you know, there were certain much-loved British campaigns that people actually looked forward to seeing new installments of. And I think on the whole, with the odd notable exception, those days have gone.
I'm reminded of this at the cover of your book, actually, Sam, which riffs on those classic Volkswagen adverts of the 60s, 70s.
A Volkswagen is never changed to make it look different, only to make it work better.
In the US, they were done by DDB, and in the UK, I think David Abbott, the most famous and emollient copywriter that the industry's perhaps ever seen here in the UK, worked on. These were works of great writing, fantastic photography, and amazing layouts. This is the sort of thing that really was not preaching to the choir exactly, but this was all about tone of voice. I wonder if you can think of anything these days that is similar to those fantastic Volkswagen ads.
Well, those ads were the catalyst for what a lot of people regard as the creative revolution in both the United States and the UK. Bill Birnbach, who's the godfather of modern advertising and the founder of DDB, made those ads. And they were the first to kind of be a bit counterintuitive, in as much as they made a virtue out of the fact that the Volkswagen Beetle was a strangely unattractive and unusual looking car. They just used kind of charm and humour and understatement as opposed to the hard sell, which had been what traditional advertising had been like. And it's what inspired lots of young creative people in Britain to get themselves involved in advertising in the 60s. I would say that nowadays, you know, that kind of level of understatement in a noisier, more crowded market is harder to get away with. If you attempted to sell something like that as an ad man to a big client.
Yeah, it is one of those things. I guess it's the sign of changing times. Also, I suppose these days brands are competing for market share, and you can almost see that borne out in the creative or lack of it sometimes. Whereas we talked about those Volkswagen ads, and we talked about the Beetle specifically, which was the car that launched all of those ads. I think Birnbach himself said, basically, our challenge here is to sell a Nazi car in a Jewish town, talking about that car, trying to sell it to New Yorkers. Do you think the challenge is just so much less and so much less beautifully or at least epigrammatically expressed these days, Sam?
What I think is clients don't want great creativity. They became suspicious of it. An agency like DDB, you know, these agencies were started by creative people with the sole intention of making great ads that they would be really proud of and that they were convinced, you know, the public would respond to because they were amusing and different and entertaining and charming. But they became victims of their own success because they grew so large that in the end they went from what Martin Sorrell describes in the book as just a charming little cottage industry into huge international companies that went public. They became limited companies. They got board members. And suddenly the creatives who were running the whole thing with one intention, which was let's make great ads, let's come up with great ideas, they were sidelined again. And there are shareholders looking at the bottom line. And as soon as you get that, people start trying to imagine that, you know, there is a corporate avenue to sort of delivering effective advertising. There isn't, actually. You really do have to take a leap of faith. And if you look at all the great ads that you're mentioning, you know, from America or from the United Kingdom over all those years, they came down to, you know, companies having the confidence to delegate their advertising and their creativity to people who were kind of creative mavericks, some of them geniuses, who they just sort of said, look, we trust you. We've got faith in your taste. You deliver what you think the public will respond to. And very often that was effective.
That was journalist, author and broadcaster Sam Delaney in his latest book, Mad Men and Bad Men, What Happened When British Politics Met Advertising, is out now, published by Faber and Faber. Today we're asking, where did all the great ads go? And I couldn't be lucky to be joined by two titans of the advertising industry. Peter Mead is chairman and founder of Abbott Mead Vickers. And Richard Brim is executive creative director at Adam and Eve DDB. What a lot of initials there are in there. Gentlemen, welcome both to the programme. Now, we've set this out, where did all the great ads go? And you both sort of rolled your eyes at that. You're both clearly sort of kings of the industry and very much part and parcel of it. So you must excuse me if I affect the idea that maybe a golden age has passed. This is the kicker for this, is that we watched, as many people around the world will have done, the final episode of Mad Men, which ended with the Coca-Cola, I want to teach the world to sing, I wish I could teach the world to sing advert. And I wonder whether you thought that was an appropriate way to end something about creativity, whether you both regard that as one of the sort of zeniths of your industry's profession.
Not particularly. Actually, it was never
thanks for tuning in, ladies and gentlemen. Yes. That's Peter Mead's diagnosis.
Well, we're the Pepsi Cola agency, so you wouldn't expect me to love Coca-Cola.
There you go, but see.
I never found it, you know, it wasn't a piece of work. I don't know what Rick thinks. Never, not a piece of work that gave me goose pimples. I mean, I just thought it was... There was a group called the New Seekers who were lurking around at the time, who were quite big, and it was taking, I think, their song and giving a large budget to some ambitious director and saying, get on with it.
I think it became more of an iconic ad than a great ad. I think it's one of those things that is always remembered. And I actually watched it as a result of hearing that Mad Men, because you heard all these rumours that Mad Men was going to finish like this and Mad Men was going to finish like that. And I actually found it finished on that. And I've not seen it for years. And I watched it and I was like, oh, okay. and I think it's the idea of it. And I think it's when it came and the climate it came in, and that's what Mad Men's done brilliantly through the series, is it's been really sort of into the detail and trying to capture the moment of the world at that one specific time. And I think it's a great example of that. But as a great ad, I know it and I remember it.
Do you think that perhaps maybe the writing of a programme like this, of a show like this, it can't be like, wow, wasn't everything amazing?
It has to
presumably, and I guess there's a bit of a political thing here where programme makers want to wonder at the commerciality of all this. They want to worry about the existential crisis that you might have for selling, you know, cigarettes or whatever it might be, that maybe there is a dark heart of this stuff.
I can't remember suffering from an existential crisis, if I knew what it
was. But the programme makers sort of may.
I mean, the thing I find astonishing about it is how another advertising agency in there called McCann Erickson allow themselves to be portrayed so badly as sexist, drinking, belligerent. Of course. I mean, both of us would recognise people from the programme. You know, there was a time when the greatest advertising agency before our two came along was Collett, Dickinson and Pierce, yeah. where and they were in Howland Street, not very far away from Charlotte Street, and they would order taxis to take them 250 yards to their restaurants in Charlotte Street from Howland Street, keep them waiting 3 hours and then drive them home. So there were sort of excesses, and lots of those have gone from our business. Some of the bad behaviour in inverted yeah. commas, I think, was produced by people who came before Rick, who were slightly mad. I remember once saying to a great creative man called Ed McCabe, who was an American copywriter. Actually, it wasn't me, it was my mother-in-law, who said to him one day, we were having dinner together, and she said to him, "What is creative?" And he said, "It's extraordinary behaviour." And extraordinary, not in a self-aggrandizement sense, but in the sense of it's outside the norm.
We're asking, where did all the great ads go? We're asking that in inverted commas because, you know, I'm sure both of you still think that a golden age is sort of always something that is tempered. You know, we have rose-tinted glasses on, don't we? There are the Hovis adverts. There are Cycling Up the Hill. Mm-hmm. There is Smash. There's Hand Built by Robots. There are the White Horses for Guinness. There are all these sort of touchstones that I'm sure we all think are fantastic pieces of advertising. I'd love to know about your favourite pieces of work that you've both worked on or that have overseen, and maybe kind of get to the kernel of where those ideas sort of came from or how you stewarded them to the billboard at Sunset Boulevard or the Old Street Roundabout or Piccadilly Circus or to the small screen.
All sorts of people emerged and far from helping the creative process, they sterilised the creative process. Mm. And you began to get lowest common denominator work everywhere. And sometimes if you're talking global, that's the only way of doing global advertising if you're not very careful. You know, that you pick something which is not going to offend anybody in 175 countries of the world.
That's the problem. And then you get strap lines that don't mean anything, aren't great pieces of writing.
And it seems like such a natty idea when you're sat in an office in Frankfurt. Oh, yeah, we need a piece of work that goes across everything. And then, yeah, we'll make it work because this one's not offending that. And it seems like such a great idea because you're the outlay of money, but... I love
that definition of corporate advertising. Do you remember in the old days? We've talked about it before, I think, Rob, yeah. But corporate advertising is a bit like peeing yourself in a dark blue suit. You feel warm all over, but nobody notices. Yeah. You know? I think we went through maybe 15, 20 years of that. You know, yeah. Of course there were always the jewels in the crown and the work that Adam and Eve have done, the work that David Abbott did for Sainsbury and, you know, some of the BT stuff. But the general level of creative work fell. It would be interesting to analyse D&AD
yes.
over that period, and you would be surprised how poor the general standard was.
We're looking back through rose-tinted spectacles. We remember these pinnacles, but the general stuff, there was a lot of dross.
No, we're looking back through absolutely with nostalgia. Thinking, God, weren't they wonderful? The days you were talking about with Collett, Dickinson and Pierce and Benson and Hedges and Smash and all of that. But from the early 2000s, you'd go back 15 years. Those 15 years, I think he and I will be pushed to sit there and say, Christ, do you remember that? That was brilliant. I wish we'd have done that.
But the early 2000s, it was sort of reflective of what was going on in the country as well. I think the whole New Labour, the whole sort of creative environment of like sort of 97 onwards, especially the sort of work that was coming out of A&V at that time, which was Guinness Surfers and Swing
Peter's
Black.
Agency,
and,
yeah.
And I remember seeing that, and I was a student, and I remember seeing that as, so you had the days of the Smash, the Martians, then you just had this sort of chasm of nothingness, and there were some nice ads in there, but they all sort of felt too big for the sake of being big.
People were eating actual potatoes they mashed themselves.
Yeah.
The bastards.
but then all of a sudden you have this story of like this old guy who swims the same every year, and then he waits, the guy that's waiting for a wave, and
the Guinness ads, yeah.
And the Guinness ads and they really sort of really kicked everybody up the derriere.
He waits. That's what he does. And they'll tell you what. Tick followed talk followed tick followed talk followed tick. Ahab says, I don't care who you are, here's to your dream. Bill sailors return to the bar.
Here's to you, Ahab!
And the fat drummer hit the beat with all his heart.
The craft was impeccable.
Yeah.
They found their niche with this then young director, Jonathan Glazer, who just had this eye. I remember being at the D&AD Awards and seeing it, and it was all sort of the same old, and this came on, and you were just like, my God, this is, and it seems very weird to say that about an advert, but I remember watching the football and that coming on, and literally hardened Arsenal supporters turning around and coming back and watching the advert. Just it yeah. grabbed you and arrested you, and that sort of paved the way for the 2000s, where the one thing you will say about the 2000s in terms of advertising is people tried, and people tried, and you can't knock that. And people failed, obviously, but then you have the sort of years of the Sony adverts and the mm-hmm. and the balls and some of the work that was coming out of a until then struggling American agency called Fallon, and then all of a sudden you've got the drumming gorilla, and Guinness set the way for all this great work to happen.
Directors these days, it's a more difficult way to make money. It was a license to print money when Ridley and Tony and Alan Parker were lurking around. And in the early days of Paul Whelan, it's much, much harder now. And I think they have to try a bit hard. And it's very hard to get clients to take risks. It was much easier in the old days.
Why was it easier in the old days? Because a lot of the time we think that maybe there's been an ironing out of the creative surface of advertising, and because something has to be understandable to people in Frankfurt, Brazil, Shanghai, and the UK, the witty strap lines, the fantastic writing that went with those iconic Volkswagen ads, for example, has sort of fallen by the wayside. Why do you think that clients are more risk averse nowadays, Peter?
Oh, because everything is short term. I mean, if you look at the average life expectancy of a marketing director in his job, it's about 3 years. So why would you put your bum in the bacon slicer if you know that in 3 years...
It's another one I'm writing down for the Mead, the Mead handbook of disses.
You know that you're going to be leaving either voluntarily or kicking and screaming. Why would you run a risk?
I wonder whether both of you know why we're asking the question, where did all the great ads go, and whether you feel it's a contentious one, I wonder.
I don't think thinking's gone. No. I think thinking has been spread across different platforms. So there's some amazing thinking going on. So if you think the Nike Fuel Band came out of essentially an advertising agency, it was like, okay, what you need to do is, on one hand you have that, and then on the other hand you have great big Super Bowl commercials, and they're coming out of the same place. And so whereas creative thinking was very sort of refined back then, now it's very much spread. So the job of a creative is not just to think of a brilliant TV commercial. That is where the crux of the argument comes from, because I don't think the great ads have gone anywhere. I think the great thinking is still there. I just think the thinking is indifferent.
It's a point I might mildly disagree with Rick on. I think that what's happened is that the tail is wagging the dog, that actually, because of all these different media opportunities, people are taking too much cognizance of that and not enough of the dog, which is the central great creative idea.
Yes.
So in some senses, it's us about face is probably not something I should say, but it is that.
So it's going in the book, Peter. It's good.
We should be talking about encouraging people to carry on, people like Rick, to produce the great idea and leave the technicians amongst us.
Maybe these new media are still new to us and to the advertising industry, that we haven't quite got the... People don't think of a viral ad. They can't imagine it as something that might have been directed by David Lean. You know, there's
craft. I'm not sure that's the point Rick's making. I mean, I think at times we're too obsessed by the new media. Instead of starting saying, look, we've got this product to sell, what would be a great way of connecting creatively with our consumer? What a great idea. Now, how are we going to make it work across all those...
In the best possible way. I think there's a massive swing, because what's happened is that it's been this rock of we need to be modern has been thrown into this thing, and all these ripples have happened. I think there's a massive swing back to the big ad and the big classical, well-crafted ad. If you look at Christmas last year, the two big boys in terms of the adverts sat across each other now is like you had Sainsbury's, which was a 4-minute film. It took this incredible story and made a mini feature, and then you've got the tearjerker of John Lewis, and I think those were the two of Christmas last year.
Would you believe it? Those two men responsible for those adverts are in the room.
No,
I like it. I am willing. I think that's a fitting.
But you would agree with that.
I would agree with that.
So it is a return to the and I think that this obsession with the, and why the Christmas ads have become the Super Bowl is because I think people like it.
People like
those things.
Do you know what it makes me want? It makes me want to teach the world to sing that there Peter Mead and Richard Brim agree so heartily on some, if not all, of the matters. And just finally, as our final quick fire round, gentlemen, as you said, you always wanted to see creative work that made you wish you'd thought of that. Mm. Which are the ads that you didn't make but you wish you had? You've got one ad, Peter.
Oh, I've gone on forever. It's an ad for Volkswagen years ago, and it's called the Snowplow.
Yeah.
And the line was, have you ever wondered what the driver of the snowplow drives to get to the snowplow? And it was a Beatle, of course.
Just perfect piece
simple
of work.
And brilliant piece of work, yeah.
Have you ever wondered how the man who drives a snowplow drives to the snowplow? This one drives a Volkswagen. So you can stop wondering.
That was Richard Brim, Executive Creative Director at Adam and Eve DDB, and Peter Mead, Chairman and Founder of Abbott Mead Vickers, attempting to answer this week's question, where did all the great ads go? Up next, cultural commentator Peter York, let's rip. Peter York knows a bit about advertising. It was impossible to have helped define the 1980s without. As a consultant and a cultural commentator, York pulls few punches, and with what elegance he does. Whatever happened to all the great ads, Peter?
I think there was a golden age, and I think the end of the golden age is for structural reasons, because a golden age of advertising demands a mass audience of the kind that you get on telly, so television commercials are the perfect form, the perfect audience, the perfect delivery mechanism. And when you get to something that's very much more fragmented and very much more global too, because the great advertising man, Sir John Hegarty, says now that 90% of the briefs that he receives are essentially international, if not say global.
Mm.
The moment you do international, if not say global, you have to reach such a level of bland effects, so culturally non-specific, that you can't evoke something very particular of a time and a place.
Now, you've got a list of a few of your favourites from the golden age of
well,
advertising.
They all
can we
seem,
also, yeah, I yes. wonder whether we could put a time frame on the golden age of advertising, as far
well,
as you're concerned.
I think the beginning of the golden age of advertising, everyone said for the UK, sort of takes off precisely at the end of the Madman period, when the baton passed to young people working in British advertising in Mayfair and Soho. I say Soho, in fact it was Mayfair, because advertising agencies then, the old advertising agencies, were in Mayfair, but the Young Turks working in their basements, the former runners, the wannabes, the likely lads, the Cockney boys, the Manchester people in the print room, were wanting to. And the most exciting of those was, of course, Collett, Dickinson, Pierce, in a rather odd office on the Euston Road. And out of that came Charles Saatchi, Alan Parker. It was a great resource of people who actually went into the wider culture and did David Putnam and did remarkable and important things. And they were all non-establishment people. Out of the breakdown of that, which precisely coincided with Swinging London, came a remarkable advertising culture, which was, for a while, the envy of the world, because it was funny, because it played with those ideas, because it played with the idea of a precious English comic idea of class.
And you talked about class. I have a feeling we're going to start talking about the water from Mallorca. This was a Heineken ad.
It used to refresh
the parts. Other beers could not reach. Now it simply opens your world or something very boring.
Yes.
But talk us, Peter, through the water from Mallorca.
I have a link with the water from Mallorca, sort of, because it was the idea that a certain kind of girl, a girl with a Hermes scarf on the chin and a pair of Gucci shoes and an Alice band and talking just so, had to be taught the new way of talking, the better way of talking, the Cockney way of talking, and gradually, with the aid of Heineken, she learnt how. And it was a magical moment.
Well, I think we could have a clip of that. I don't think our listeners can slake their thirst any other way than by hearing it.
The water in Mallorca doesn't taste like what it ought to.
No, no. The water in Mallorca don't taste like what it ought to.
The water in Mallorca doesn't taste quite how it should.
Mallorca.
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 Oi, Dale, any danger of some refreshment in here?
Here you are. Get your laughing gear on there.
Oh, golly. The water in Mallorca...
What's that?
...don't taste like what it ought to. Oh, gosh.
Where are we going to go next? And I wonder also in our choices whether we're selling FMCGs, fast-moving consumer goods, whether we're selling luxury items, because there's all sorts of different ways. You know, a £2 bottle of Heineken can say a lot about you as much as a Jaguar can, presumably.
Yes, but we were starting in the 80s to sell luxury cars on telly with very compelling advertising. And so, particularly the German cars, which had only existed in a tiny metropolitan bubble, Mercedes, BMW, Audi, were starting to be sold on television in quite an aggressive way. Well, when I say aggressive, very amusing or very elegant.
Are these adverts valid as culture? We've talked about them as great pieces of entertainment within a 30-minute or a 30-second or a one-minute spot,
yes,
in between a game show or whatever it might be, or a football match on the television. Are they pieces of valid culture?
Let the viewers decide. One fantastic change from the 60s through to the 80s. In the 60s, in polls, people said they didn't like advertising. They didn't like the interruption. They didn't like the hard sell content, the mnemonics, all the rather predictable Americanized stuff. Come the 80s, in polls, people said they did like it. They loved those bits of 30-second theatre. And they went on being tremendously popular. That was an amazing achievement. And people remember them now. You only have to start playing a couple of chords from the, let's say, the Hamlet cigar ads at their very best.
Happiness is a cigar called Hamlet, the mild cigar.
Rab C. Nesbitt. Yeah. In the photo booth with his comb over, all those things, and people fall about. So they were elegant, they were funny, they were particular, and they were for us and about us. And that will be true in other countries too, that the very best of their advertising then was for and about you, but now it's global corporation stuff.
That was Peter York bringing us to the end of this week's show and helping to answer the question, where did all the great ads go? Most of our guests admit that there was a golden age, but that we all love to look back through rose-tinted Ray-Bans whenever we can. However, our practicing creatives assure that great work's being created as we speak, but it's just spread thinner than it was across all those bloomin' platforms we love so much. The great ads, then, they've been sliced up for sure, and the golden age... maybe it was a little more gold-plated than we generally care to remember. You've been tuned in to Culture with me, Robert Bound, on Monocle 24. Happiness is a producer called Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time next week. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bound. Thank you very much for tuning in.